Today's March 23rd, 2015. This is the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources. Today is a public hearing on House Bill 5018, the Department of Environmental Quality. So we'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 5018. And before we call up Director Peterson, we'll turn it over to Mr. Siebert.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would just note, as has been prior practice, you have a copy of the LFO presentation saved under today's hearing date, along with the agency's presentation, their appendix, and also a copy of the governor's budget. I would just note a couple things. One is that for DEQ and the co-chair budget, the co-chair framework budget, identified two areas for investment that involve this department, and that is protecting Oregon's water quality with new general fund investments and protecting Oregon's air quality with continued investments in monitoring. And that's it for me, Mr. Chair.
All right, and with that, we'll call up Director Peterson.
Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, for the record, Dick Peterson, Director of the Department of Environmental Quality. Good morning to you. I want to introduce Jim Royce, who's sitting behind me to my left. He's our budget manager, and he will be available for part of the presentation. More detail, he'll be up here when we get into budget to help answer some questions that you might have. Over the next couple of days, I plan to cover just an overview of the agency, get into more specifics on DEQ's air, water, and land program, talk about agency management, some of the work we're doing to manage to outcomes, and of course, get into the governor's balanced budget for 2015-17. That would include policy option packages, and we'll briefly talk about proposed legislation. Before I get started, I want to thank Mr. Siebert for his great work. He's been great to work with, and over the years, I've really enjoyed that relationship and admire the work that he does. And so, I just wanted to acknowledge that good work by Mr. Siebert.
You don't have to flatter him. His head's already too big.
And it doesn't help. So. He's not going to lighten up.
You just get cut more.
I retract what I just said. So DEQ's mission is to be a leader in restoring, maintaining, and enhancing Oregon's air, water, and land. And the mission supports both a healthy environment and economy. And I want to note that these things are not mutually exclusive. DEQ does not do its work alone. All Oregonians contribute to and depend on clean air, clean water, and productive land. And we build our work around that understanding. What I'd like to do is share some highlights from DEQ's history. Oregon's history of environmental regulation dates back to 1938, when the Oregon State Sanitary Authority was formed as a division within the State Board of Health. The statutes and programs on this slide are a portion of what has been established by the Oregon Legislature and the Federal Environmental Protection Agency since 1938. I will highlight some examples, not all of them on the slide, but I want to highlight some examples. Between the 1960s and 1970s, in 1969, the authority's name was changed to the Department of Environmental Quality. It was established as an independent state agency at that time. Oregon is a delegated state. The Federal Clean Air Act was established in 1963, and the Clean Water Act was established in 1972. In 1975, the Oregon Legislature established the Vehicle Inspection Program and Oregon's Landmark Bottle Bill. In 1980, Congress enacted both the Federal Resource Conservation Recovery Act, called RCRA, and the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation Liability Act, referred to as CERCLA or Superfund. In 1987, the Federal Underground Storage Tank legislation was enacted, leading to Oregon establishing its hazardous waste, cleanup, and underground storage tank programs. In 1989, the Oregon Legislature established the Oregon Groundwater Quality Protection Act. In 1993, DEQ began permitting major industrial sources of air pollution under Title V of the Clean Air Act. In 2000, DEQ began implementing total maximum daily loads, which are required under the Clean Water Act. A TMDL is a water quality improvement plan that describes maximum amount of pollution that can be released into a body of water while still meeting water quality standards. In 2005, DEQ began working to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by adopting low emission vehicle standards. In 2014, DEQ developed the 2050 vision for materials management in Oregon. So you can see there's a lot of history to the establishment of DEQ in connection to with the work that we do. This is really a high-level view of DEQ's organization. We have a governing body, the Environmental Quality Commission, that is a policy and rulemaking body. It's a five-member citizen panel that's appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. We have about 723 full-time employees who work to achieve our mission within DEQ. DEQ employees work and live in communities that we interact with. To facilitate this, we have offices throughout the state that's shown by this map here. Our headquarters, laboratory, and six vehicle inspection stations are all located in the Portland metropolitan area. The lab is co-located with the Oregon Health Authority Public Health Lab in Hillsboro. Our Northwest Region main office is also located in Portland with a smaller office in Tillamook. In our Western Region, we have offices in Salem, Eugene, Coos Bay, and Medford. We also have a vehicle inspection station in Medford. Our Eastern Region is made up of offices in the Dalles, Pendleton, Baker City, Klamath Falls, LeGrand, and Bend. To deliver on our mission, DEQ focuses on its priorities, and I'm going to be talking a lot about these through the course of my presentation, but certainly one of our priorities is to improve and protect water and air quality in Oregon. Another priority is to streamline and modernize our systems and processes. DEQ is making its processes more efficient to ensure outstanding timely service to our customers. DEQ is modernizing some of our critical but aging systems that are needed to support our work and to meet stakeholder and the public's need. We work to meet community needs. DEQ works with communities of all sizes to create solutions that work for them rather than a one-size-fits-all approach. We reduce the environmental impacts of materials and products. I will talk about materials management in our 2050 vision later in our presentation. Though we have a variety of programs and projects, we use similar approaches, such as partnerships and engaging communities, local and other state federal agencies, stakeholders, and the public. This slide is a representation of what DEQ does generally at a very high level. I'm going to be going through some detail about DEQ's work throughout the presentation. Starting off, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency delegates implementation of several federal programs to DEQ. These programs are a significant focus of our work. So starting in the middle, the box entitled Standards, we set standards or implement federal standards for air, land, and water quality to protect public health and the environment. When we set these standards, they have to be approved by the Environmental Protection Agency. Moving up on the wheel, one of the things we do is monitor DEQ's environment by taking samples of air, water, and land, and we do this in order to assess whether standards are being met, to understand Oregon's environment, and make informed decisions based on information. Moving around the wheel to the right, we establish environmental priorities by developing solutions to address environmental problems. That is done by working with communities to attain air quality standards, for example. And we develop rules to implement statute. That certainly is an environmental strategy. Continuing on around the wheel, we issue permits for discharges into water, emissions into air, and disposal of waste. We license professionals, including asbestos abatement contractors, on-site septic system installers, and underground storage tank workers. We certify wastewater treatment system operators. Again, moving around to the wheel to the left there, we assist businesses and individuals with compliance of environmental law. We provide technical assistance by providing expertise to businesses to help meet federal and state requirements or to improve practices. For example, we have a regional solutions team employees that are co-located with other partners of regional solutions centers to help businesses and communities. We help by, in one area, air quality small business assistance program, but that provides pollution prevention recommendations to small businesses and assists these firms in meeting air quality requirements. Also, we provide incentives. We provide loans and grant. We have loans and grant programs. For example, we have a Clean Water State Revolving Fund, a diesel grant program in brownfields. Looking at brownfields, DEQ uses approximately $300,000 per year from EPA grants to assess brownfields to determine cleanup needs and potential for redevelopment. We do provide education and outreach as well. We work with trade associations, community groups, and the general public on not only the quality of the environment, but with some on what it takes to meet water quality, air quality, and land quality requirements. And moving up in the last box in the wheel is around compliance and ensuring that state and federal environmental laws and rules are met. We do this through compliance by conducting inspections. We oversee investigations and cleanup at high priority contaminated sites. And we respond to complaints. By way of complaints, we get approximately 3,400 or almost 3,500 complaints per year in DEQ. That's what we took in last year in the agency. And a critical part and a part of our mission and important is enforcing environmental law. DEQ assesses compliance with environmental laws through complaint response, report review, and inspections. Most of our regulated community works to maintain compliance, and I would applaud their efforts because, by and large, folks do comply with environmental law. However, if there is a violation, DEQ usually handles it informally through warning letters or field citations or visits with the facility. For major violations or when informal resolution fails, DEQ initiates formal enforcement through civil penalties and compliance order. We can also get to criminal cases, but that's very rare in Oregon to get that far. An example of enforcement in 2014, DEQ issued 209 appealable formal enforcement actions that included penalties. The assessed value of those penalties were about $2,700,000. Now I want to spend a little time going through DEQ's programs, air, water, and land programs, and also talk about agency support services. The three major media programs are air, water, and land, and they're roughly split, evenly split in terms of overall funding and FTE. First, in air quality, our overall goal is to achieve healthy air quality for all Oregonians. To reach this goal, we direct our efforts towards meeting and maintaining compliance with federal health-based air quality standards by understanding and protecting people from toxic air pollutants such as benzene and diesel particulate, by reducing greenhouse gas emissions to meet state goals, and by reducing haze so that we can enjoy our beautiful scenery. DEQ is responsible for air quality in all parts of Oregon, except for Lane County, where Lane Regional Air Protection Agency has jurisdiction. DEQ does provide oversight to the Lane County program. I thought it'd be helpful to have an understanding just the number of entities that we deal with, and here's a look at air quality numbers for Oregon. DEQ permits and inspects about 2,600 industrial sources through our two air quality permitting programs. We also permit about 2,500 medium and smaller sources that are permitted through our air contaminant discharge permit program, referred to as ACDP. And the remaining 110 largest industrial sources are permitted through our federal operating permit program known as Title V. Title V is a reference in the Clean Air Act. In 2014, DEQ, through its vehicle inspection program emission, tested about 575,000 vehicles in the Portland and Metro and Medford metropolitan areas. We reviewed more than 600 asbestos abatement notifications and licensed nearly 1,000 contractors and workers in that area. We issued more than 1,500 tanker truck certifications to make sure gasoline and diesel fuels are transported and transferred without leaking vapors. And we assisted hundreds of small businesses teaching environmentally safe practices and assisting them with compliance procedures. We worked with five communities to reduce fine particulate pollution in the state. We've done a good job in Oregon in protecting our air and improving air quality. And since the 1980s, DEQ has been working with communities statewide to restore air quality when they don't meet federal air quality standards. Under the Clean Air Act, the term non-attainment is a federal designation given to areas that violate air quality standards. Being declared in non-attainment is very serious for a community. And what that means, if they're non-attainment, number one, the air is unhealthy. Second, it triggers legal requirements for states to work with community to reduce pollution and meet air quality standards. It imposes stricter requirements on new and potentially existing industry in the area. And just the stigma of non-attainment can be a deterrent to attracting new businesses. If you look at the map here, the green stars on this map show success stories. These are communities that have violated federal standards in the past and adopted emission reduction strategies and have come back into compliance with federal standards. In 2006, EPA tightened the standard for fine particulate, also known as PM 2.5. The standard change was based on new scientific evidence that fine particulate can cause respiratory problems, heart disease, and cancer. As a result, two communities, Klamath Falls and Oak Ridge, they're the black triangles on the map, were designated as non-attainment areas. Attainment plans for those communities were submitted to EPA in December of 2012. The gray triangles for Lakeview and Prineville are areas that are violating the standard but have not yet been designated as non-attainment by EPA. The white triangles here, Hillsborough and Burns, are areas of concern where there have been recent levels above the standard, but the three-year average does not reach the level for the violation. Smoke from residential burning along with cold weather and air stagnation is the cause of the air quality problems in these areas. DEQ is working closely with local governments in all of these communities to avoid non-attainment designation and to figure out what reduction measures works best for that community. Strategies for reducing particulate include a local wood burning curtailment program, which requires residents to limit burning during wintertime inversions and air stagnation, wood stove changeouts to cleaner heating sources, controlling emissions from industrial sources, working with state and federal agencies on reducing smoke impacts from prescribed burning, open burning, and field burning. Statewide, DEQ administers the Heat Smart program that requires removal of old, high-polluting, uncertified stoves from homes at the time of home sale and provides a gradual reduction of smoke as homes change ownership. Bottom line is we work very hard with communities to get them out of non-attainment or at least make sure they don't get into non-attainment because of the significant consequences of that. Ozone is another air pollutant of concern in Oregon. This graph here shows three-year averages of ozone monitored in six Oregon communities with historically higher ozone levels. Ozone or smog can cause irritation of the nose, throat, and lungs. Some of the strategies to reduce ozone include vehicle inspection, emission reductions from industrial operations, and air quality advisories to reduce emissions on high smog days. We've done a good job in Oregon, and we are in compliance with the current ozone standard, which is the red line at the top, which is at 75 parts per billion. However, the Environmental Protection Agency is looking to make that standard more restrictive, more stringent. And the green line is the range that EPA has recently proposed for new, more protective ozone standards. Their proposal is response to scientific research, which shows that exposure to lower levels of ozone air pollution is more harmful than previously thought. EPA's Clean Air Science Advisory Committee advised a standard as low as 60 parts per billion, which is the bottom line on the chart here, and they proposed that to protect public health generally for exposure to ozone. Where it stands right now is EPA is currently taking comments on the proposed range, and they plan to finalize the standard in October of 2015. We're not sure where it's going to land, but obviously we're watching it really closely as it pertains to Oregon and Oregon communities that could be in trouble relative to the ozone standard.
What is the implication of that standard in terms of if they imposed it at that lower level, what would be the impact in terms of the activities you might have to engage in?
Yeah, Co-Chair Devlin, thank you for the question. If they imposed it at the very lowest level, you can see that three of our communities and one of them nearly would be out of compliance, meaning they'd be in non-attainment. What that basically means is that they would be those areas would be have to come up with a plan for reducing ozone, and probably more importantly to the community is number one, the health of their citizens, of course, but severely restricting businesses that might want to expand or come in, because once a airshed is in non-attainment, any businesses that want to grow or site in that area have to undergo very strict standards in order to place their business or expand their businesses there. Yeah. Another area that's a growing concern for Oregon's air is air toxics. Air toxics is a broad term, but generally they're air pollutants known or suspected to cause cancer or other serious health problems. Air toxics come from a variety of sources, as indicated on this slide. They include cars and trucks, all types of burning, whether it's fireplaces or wood stoves, businesses, and industries. EPA does set federal standards for air toxics from industry, and DEQ, because we're federally delegated the responsibility under that, implements these through standards through our industrial permit program. That's that Title V, 110 sources that we regulate through that particular act. Over the years, these permit limits have resulted in significant reductions in air toxics statewide. Diesel, however, is one of the most potent air toxics to which Oregons are exposed. DEQ grant programs provide federal funds for the installation of particulate filters on existing vehicles and repowering engines. Since 2008, DEQ has provided $6.9 million in funding and upgraded about 725 diesel engines in the state. Another large source of air toxics is residential wood burning. Old uncertified wood stoves and conventional fireplaces contribute the bulk of toxic pollution in this category. The same strategies that reduce particulates, such as wood stove changeouts or the HeatSmart program, also reduce toxic air pollutants such as benzene and formaldehyde from burning. Vehicle emissions are another very large source of toxic air pollutants such as benzene and arsenic. The highest toxic concentrations occur in the most populated areas and especially in high traffic areas. DEQ programs for vehicle inspection, cleaner vehicles, and cleaner fuels help reduce risk from vehicle emissions.
Question?
Mm-hmm.
Dick, I know this is kind of redundant, but you don't have probably the number one pollutant of all, and that's forest fires, as far as adding pollutants into the air. Are you doing anything with the Forest Service? I mean, are we working anything to try to, reduce the fuel load? I mean, compared to any of these, it's a huge, huge toxic pollutant, and, forests burn every summer, and yet we don't seem to make it on any of our pollution guidelines.
Mm-hmm. Co-Chair Ray Field, Senator Hansel, thank you for calling that out, because certainly fires, forest fires, are a huge source of particulate that, certainly in the summertime or in the fall when these occur, have serious impacts to communities. One of the things we do in partnership with the Oregon Department of Forestry, have what's called a smoke management plan. And what that does for us is work through a system of allowing prescribed burn, which is to go into an area that's loaded with fuel, if you will, and do controlled burns to ensure that that fuel's not available when, you know, a fire might rage through there. So how that works is use with the Department of Oregon Department of Forestry that actually implements that program, is look at meteorology, look at the area, and allow folks to go in and do that so that the smoke that comes up doesn't come in into a community. So that's one way, certainly. But, you know, again, thanks for calling your attention. That certainly wildfires have a huge impact on Oregon's population, especially when they occur. Our wood smoke problem with PM2.5 is primarily during those winter days, inversion times, when, you know, the air is trapped in an area and there's a lot of wood burning going on there. But we're not disregarding, certainly not disregarding smoke from wildfires.
Mr. Chair. Okay, just following up on the senator's question. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think the, you know, the big problem, at least as is perceived with forest fires, is on federal lands. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if the EPA is addressing this at all at the federal level, and if there are conversations at that level about proper use of forests, management of forests. Is that we obviously can't control what happens on the federal forests.
Right. Chair Rayfield, Senator Dembro, actually, our smoke management plan does apply to federal lands as well as to state and private forests. So we work with Forest Service and BLM when they want to do prescribed burn there. As far as the overall management of federal lands, that's certainly a very large topic that certainly this body talks a lot about. The federal agencies talk a lot about how generally to manage forests in a way that, you know, not only protects the environment, but allows for proper management to use forests in the way they're intended.
I do another
yes.
I've received on occasion some complaints that the where the air monitoring apparatuses are posted or built or exist create, in the eyes of some, a skewed result based upon the fact that it's next to a train track or between buildings. Or mm-hmm. How do you respond to that? And how do you determine where your monitors are going to be in any given community?
Mm-hmm. Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, we have at our lab in Hillsboro, they're the ones that place the monitor. So when they go look at an area to put a monitor in, they're trying to be very mindful of the things that you brought up, because we don't want to skew the information and data based on, you know, like you said, a train or anything. So they look at it before they go in. I think one of the things that I've heard as well is that often non-attainment will be triggered off one site, you know, that there is a monitor in one site. And I understand that. However, I'll lay out there is that the intent with the federal air quality standards and the requirement is to ensure that the most sensitive populations are protected. So often we'll have a monitor in an area that's maybe by a school or in an area where the concentration might be the most, where there's sensitive populations, and look at the whole airshed that's contributing to that. But really the monitor is intended to really look at where the exposure is the most serious in an area. But our lab looks at the area pretty closely. And if we feel like it's really being skewed by something other than what it's intended for, we'll move that monitor.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Another area work for DEQ in the air quality realm is reducing greenhouse gas emissions. This chart shows DEQ's emissions by source type. DEQ's greenhouse gas reduction efforts focus on reductions from industrial sources, that's the red slice on the pie there, and transportation sources, that's the blue slice, which is also the largest slice of the pie. For industrial sources, EPA has recently proposed for greenhouse gas reductions from power plants known as 111D, or the Clean Power Plan. Once those final rules are adopted, which likely will be towards the end of this summer, DEQ will lead the development and implementation of that plan. For transportation, DEQ leads two efforts. Number one is reduce vehicle tailpipe emissions through Oregon's low emission vehicle program and also its zero emission vehicle program. And we also will begin reducing emissions from fuel through the clean fuel standards that were just recently signed by the governor. They will reduce the carbon content of this will reduce the carbon content of transportation fuels by 10% by 2025. Another big part of the air quality program is reducing haze in Oregon's national parks and wilderness areas. In 1999, EPA adopted the regional haze rule. DEQ's first plan showed improvement and was approved by EPA. The plan included the closure of PGE's Boardman coal-fired power plant by 2020. We still have challenges with wildfires and prescribed burns, as Senator Hansel pointed out. DEQ is working with Oregon Department of Forestry and federal agencies to reduce risk from wildfires through improved forest health while protecting communities from smoke intrusion during prescribed burns. I'm just a little side note on that point. We had a bad fire year last year, as we've had in previous years, and one of DEQ's involvement certainly was with communities as small as Mitchell that were really troubled with a lot of smoke for a long period of time. And so one of the things we do during those times is get out with the community and talk to them about how to best protect themselves, their kids, or whatever, and talk to them about what smoke might mean. With that learning lesson, we're trying to meet early with Oregon Department of Forestry and others to get ready for what could be another bad fire year. Hopefully not, but snowpack's not feeling too good about that right now. So we really get out, try to work hard on that ahead of time. What I want to show by this chart here is how much of our air quality work has benefits for multiple pollutant reductions. On the left side of the chart are some of our key source control efforts, and across the top are key pollutants we need to reduce. Because sources emit multiple pollutants, our source control efforts are effective for multiple pollutants. For example, clean engines and cleaner fuels reduce particulate, air toxics, ozone, greenhouse gas, and pollutants affecting visibility. So moving on to water quality, DEQ employs a variety of programs and strategies to protect water quality. We monitor and assess water quality to track trends over time, that guide decision making, and evaluate the effectiveness of efforts to improve water quality. We set water quality standards approved by EPA to ensure water is safe for swimming and boating, fish and other aquatic life, and other uses. When monitoring data indicates we are not meeting standards, we partner with others to develop clean water plans and implement projects to improve water quality. Probably see a little bit of a theme here, water quality by the numbers. We protect surface and groundwater by managing over 6,300 permits for wastewater discharges to water and land, and more than 1,900 stormwater permits. We oversee local implementation of on-site septic system regulations in 24 counties and directly implement the program in 12 counties, serving over 30% of Oregonians who rely on septic systems to treat wastewater. We license more than 700 septic system installers and service providers and certify more than 1,700 wastewater system operators to ensure they conduct their work in ways that are safe for the public and the environment and protect the investment. This map shows water bodies throughout the state that are not meeting water quality standards. The black line means that a water quality improvement plan is in place. As a reminder, when a water body is not meeting a water quality standard, we have to, under the Clean Water Act, have to develop a water quality improvement plan. The red lines here mean that a water quality improvement plans need to be developed. We currently have more than 25 water quality improvement plans in places covering roughly half the state.
Question?
Yep.
Yeah.
Are there any streams in Oregon that are meeting? I mean, that looks like everything.
Chair Rayfield, Representative Hansel, the map is pretty expansive. One of our biggest areas that are not meeting water quality standards is temperature. And that's probably a huge part of why you see it a lot of colors on the map here. There are a lot of water bodies that are in compliance. If you were to blow up one of these areas, you could see a lot of water bodies in a particular basin that expands way beyond this that are actually meeting the standards. A lot of this are some of the larger, certainly, areas downstream from a lot of input.
Mm-hmm. Is this your standards, or is this a federal standard, or is it both?
Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, they're both, and let me clarify that. We have to develop water quality standards that are adopted and approved by the Environmental Quality Commission. All of them, under the Clean Water Act, have to be approved by EPA, and often involve the National Marine Fisheries Services or U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service under consultations. So any water quality standard that we develop has to go to EPA and for approval and likely look at consultation with the services, make sure it's protective.
And if I look at that correctly, the entire Columbia River is not meeting water standards?
That's correct, Senator Hansel, mostly for temperature but also for toxics. We do track progress for looking at water quality trends, and I want to respond a little bit more to that. Oregonians are doing a great job with improving and protecting water quality. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but certainly knowing that it is a partnership to look at improvements, we Oregonians are really investing in water quality because it's so important to them.
Follow up on me. I appreciate that, but I mean, are we creating standards that are virtually impossible to meet, and creating a? I mean, I guess if every major waterway in the state, which would appear to be on that map, including the Columbia, our biggest and deepest, mm-hmm. aren't meeting some type of standard. I mean, how realistic is that standard? I mean, are we? I guess I'm having a disconnect here.
Mm-hmm. Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, I believe standards are developed with the good work of stakeholder input with Oregon that reflect what is needed to protect the beneficial uses of the system. And so often there is challenges in meeting those standards. One of the things we try to take into account is there's a lot of natural occurring things in our system. For instance, mercury is an example that's naturally occurring. So when we go in and look at a total maximum daily load in an area that's not meeting the standard, we will try to look at, is this really a natural thing, or is it, a number that we can attain? And so that's one of the analysis that we do when we first go in and look at a water body that's not meeting the standard. Okay. This slide here is one that shows how we track progress at looking at water quality trends in Oregon. And these are actually our one of our KPMs, actually three of our KPMs together on one slide, KPM 9, A, B, and C. The blue bar here means the percentage of water bodies that have improving water quality. The red bar means the percentage that have declining water quality. And the green line is meant to show the percentage in good to excellent condition. So rather than looking just at the standard, is how are we doing in terms of the direction the water body is heading? So this information is derived from data that we've been collecting from about 130 sites for several decades and includes all the major rivers in the state. And we've made remarkable improvements over time with our waterways. We made big strides in the 1990s and early 2000s with as many as 70% of the sites showed improving trends that is indicated by the blue bars. In addition, focusing on the green line, in 1990 only 27% of the sites were rated as good to excellent. Now we're around 50%. However, we've hit this plateau with waters in good to excellent condition. Certainly, we want to see the green line trending upward again and reduce the number of sites with declining trends and want to continue to work with the Oregonians on that.
I was just kind of looking at the showing declining trends, and it looks from, I mean, gosh, from 2001 almost to 2009, there was kind of an increase in showing declining trends, and then it somewhat slipped down. And I just wanted, if you could address that, or just kind of, I'd be curious why that happened or what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Chair Rayfield, or Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Rayfield. Yeah, that's something certainly where we're looking at, and it's hard to pinpoint. A lot of it is related to, I believe, growth in the areas in terms of non-point source runoff. There's some issues there for sure. Sometimes it might be a more restrictive standard that has come in that has shown that. So there's a lot of different reasons, and some of them are basin specific. Input from an area that has high density of, say, septic systems that puts bacteria in the waters that has grown or some outlived their usefulness, those sorts of things.
And then just one follow-up.
Yeah.
And the other thing, obviously, from the 1990s to early 2000, I mean, you're making some significant progress, and I was I'm assuming that there was some low-hanging fruit, mm-hmm. if you will, and then now it's, I guess, the ability to make that progress is more difficult, mm-hmm. but I was just kind of curious if my impression was correct or if there were other reasons for that.
Yeah, Co-Chair Rayfield, a lot of the reason for that is what's been happening in the point source realm, where there's been a lot of increased controls and point sources that discharge directly into waterways, and I think that's a big reason why we saw a lot of improvements in water bodies that we're measuring. No.
Thank you.
As I pointed out before, if water quality data indicates standards are not being met, we work with local groups to develop clean water plans to reduce pollutions. They're also called total maximum daily loads. TMDL identifies the source of pollution, both point source and non-point source, and sets targets for pollution reduction. This information is used by local groups and landowners to develop plans to reduce pollution and improve water quality. DEQ oversees this work and assists our clean water partners with finding effective ways to achieve pollution reductions. Collecting information on water quality improvement projects and measuring water quality response is a critical element of this work. It is the foundation of an adaptive management approach, which involves collecting and analyzing information and data to evaluate its effectiveness, measure progress, and revise or redirect efforts when necessary. TMDLs are just one tool for restoring water quality in Oregon. Throughout the state, water quality protection and restoration are the result of a vast array of voluntary and regulatory efforts, partnerships, and targeted investments. Oregonians place a high value on water quality and watershed health. as demonstrated by millions of dollars of conservation investments annually from state and federal agencies, local governments, businesses, municipalities, landowners, conservation groups, and others. DEQ's role is to help ensure this money is being spent wisely and achieve the desired environmental outcome. We fulfill our role in a number of ways. We analyze water quality and landscape data to identify sources of pollution and determine how we can target restoration efforts to get the biggest bang for the buck. We work with local, state, and federal partners to design effective pollution reduction projects and monitoring plans to track their progress. We train watershed councils and other volunteers on proper methods for collecting and reporting water quality data so that this information is shared with the public and used for decision making. And we produce water quality reports to keep the public and stakeholders informed on water quality status and trends. DEQ also plays an important role in protecting Oregon's groundwater resources. DEQ landowners and other partners use a variety of strategies to protect groundwater quality, including monitoring, education, wellhead protection programs, management practices, and permits. DEQ designates groundwater management areas and areas of elevated contaminant concentrations. When that occurs, we work with local communities to develop a plan for reducing groundwater contamination. As shown on the map, there are currently three groundwater management areas in the state. One's the lower Umatilla Basin, one in northern Malheur County, and another in the southern Willamette Valley. In 2013, DEQ received funding to establish a statewide groundwater monitoring program. Our objective is to identify areas with contamination and work with Oregon Health Authority to inform homeowners with drinking water wells about potential risks. The initial focus for this monitoring is the Medford Ashland area in Clatsop Plain. Clatsop Plain is that area on the coast mostly in Clatsop County. And we will be collecting well samples and tests for nitrates, arsenic, bacteria, current use pesticides, and metals. For much of the work we do, there is an increase in importance and emphasis on leveraging partnerships and supporting voluntary efforts. The example I want to point out here is a pesticide stewardship partnership. We work with growers to keep current use pesticides out of water. For example, we're closely working with cherry growers in Wasco County. We sample local streams and analyze them for a number of pesticides. Malathion was frequently detected. Malathion is an insecticide that is widely used for agriculture and landscaping. Growers worked voluntarily with Oregon Department of Agriculture and OSU Extension to come up with ways to change their practices to address this issue. As a result, growers increased the use of weather stations to schedule applications during periods of low wind and shifted to using more ground spraying rather than aerial spraying when spraying near streams. As you can see by this bar chart here, the efforts paid off quickly. DEQ and its agency partners are currently involved in pesticide stewardship partners in 7 watersheds across the state, and we're expecting to add 2 more this year. This is a wildly successful program that really is engaging folks in a voluntary way to protect and improve water quality, way ahead of regulation. DEQ provides loans for water quality improvement projects through its Clean Water State Revolving Loan Program. Since 1990, we provided more than $1 billion to more than 150 communities. This funding enables communities to meet the demands of growing populations and new or expanding businesses. We are also able to finance green projects through the loan program, such as irrigation upgrades and storm water controls. I'm going to switch to land quality. Land quality is a various group of programs that work to ensure healthy landscapes where Oregonians live, work, and play. These programs are designed to achieve sustainable materials management, safely manage hazardous and solid waste, prevent and respond to spills of hazardous substances, and restore contaminated land, including brownfields. Here's land quality by the numbers. We permit 366 solid waste and hazardous waste facilities, including landfills, transfer stations, and compost facilities. We license 265 underground storage tank service providers. These are businesses that remove tanks and conduct cleanups of leaking underground storage tanks. We have overseen the cleanup of 1,200 contaminated sites since 1991. These include hazardous substances ranging from small dry cleaners to large industrial facilities. We also have overseen cleanup of over 6,500 leaking underground storage tank sites since 1988. We've cleaned up 27,000 leaking home heating oil tanks since 2000. We've recycled 120 million pounds of electronic waste since 2009. I apologize, the slide is incorrect. It should read pounds under the fourth bullet, not tons. My apologies for that. We tried.
You were doing California's share there.
Yeah, right. So looking at land quality programs in a little more detail, first, materials management. The production, use, and disposal of materials all contribute to a variety of environmental impacts in our environment and homes. Our materials management program considers the impact of materials across their full life cycle, from raw material extraction through manufacturing, use, recycling, or disposal. The biggest potential for environmental improvements are in design and production. DQ doesn't make or design products, but we do help businesses better understand the environmental impacts of their options. Here are a few examples of the work in the area. A few years ago, DQ helped Dave's Killer Bread understand if their degradable bags were recycled and made into new products, such as plastic lumber, those new products might subsequently degrade while being used. This could threaten the viability of the plastics recycling. They could either drop the recycling promotion or stop using degradable plastics. After understanding the environmental consequences of their choices, the company changed their packaging. Another example is DQ's work preventing food waste. In a pilot project of two Intel cafeterias, pre-consumed food waste was reduced by 47%. DQ just completed a study to assess possible ways to increase plastics recycling in Oregon. The study identified 8 programs which could increase plastics recycling by 30,000 tons per year, an increase of 54% over current recycling tonnage. These programs could also lead to business development for plastic recyclers, similar to the way that the bottle bill expansion in 2009 led to the construction of a plastic processing facility in St. Helens.
Yeah.
On that reducing food waste, what was the program there? Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
Just curious.
Yeah. Co-chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, I'm going to get back to you with the specifics,
sure.
But as I understand, it was really looking at the volume that was wasted and only putting out for consumption what that was used. But we'll get back to you on that for sure, the specifics. Another program that's in the land quality program is ballast water management. The discharge of ballast water, which is ballast water is used to provide vessel stability, may introduce aquatic non-indigenous species into Oregon waterways, potentially resulting in ecological damage, economic cost, and our human health concerns. To reduce this risk to Oregon waters, DQs, we monitor vessels, we screen reports from vessel traffic, we manage and analyze data from long-term trends, we inspect vessels and sample ballast tanks for compliance, and we consult with the maritime industry. And we prepare for response to invasive species emergencies. We also respond to spills in a land quality program. Oil and hazardous material spills pose a major threat to Oregon's water, air, land, and wildlife. DQ works with other agencies in industry to prevent and respond to spills of these materials. We review and approve marine spill prevention and response plans to prevent and mitigate damage to natural resources from spills. We lead and participate in response drills. We determine response need and oversee environmental cleanup. And we work with federal, local, and other state governments to ensure a quick, coordinated response to marine spills. The environmental cleanup program is inland quality, and it provides oversight for the investigation and cleanup of a range of contaminated properties from large federal Superfund sites, such as Portland Harbor, to thousands of small gas station leaking underground storage tanks across the state, including the former gas station site pictured on this slide. This is now a tourism center in Lakeview after it was cleaned up and redeveloped. I thought it was good to point out some examples. So this is a Mentor Island site in Salem, and it's one example of a successful brownfield cleanup and redevelopment. The site had multiple contaminants due to past industrial activity. Now it provides improved habitat and natural areas, and is now integral to economic, community, and tourism initiatives, also to recreation and education goals for the city. This was a public-private plus federal, state, local partnership to get to this good outcome. Another example is one that's really focused, as many of them are, on economic development sites. This is restoring contaminated land that's called the Hawthorne Building, and it's just east on the east end of the Morrison Bridge in Portland, which opened in January for a prominent software company. Due to a long-term industrial use, contaminants consisted of PCBs, metals, petroleum, dioxins, and asbestos. In 2014, PGE worked with prospective purchaser Killian Pacific to revitalize this property. The site was cleaned up so that would meet commercial use standards for future office space. Killian negotiated a prospective purchaser agreement with DEQ to limit liability for past contamination in exchange for Killian's commitment to return the vacant site to productive use. The property was ready for occupancy in January of 2015 and is leased to meet the expansion needs of Viewpoint Software, a major international company with headquarters just across the street. So I've just talked about DQ's air, water, and land programs. And I mentioned early on in presentation is really what's fundamental to the success of each one of these programs is partnerships. We would never accomplish our mission without them. The organizations depicted here are just a small sample of the groups with whom DQ works to improve and protect Oregon's environment. I'll give you a couple examples. One is we partner with Oregon Health Authority to implement the beach monitoring program. DQ conducts the monitoring, and the OHA notifies the public if waters are unsafe for swimming or fishing. We take advantage of another agency's field presence and expertise to implement programs more efficiently. For example, Oregon Department of Agriculture administers our water quality permit program for concentrated animal feeding operations. And a number of large cities administer our industrial stormwater permits. DQ's partnerships with local governments are key to improving air quality communities that violate or nearly violate federal standards, and I talked about this before. This past year, DQ worked closely with the officials from the town of Lakeview, Lake County, and a local advisory committee. Together, we developed a plan to identify pollutant reduction strategies that would work best for the community and hopefully keep them out of non-attainment. One partnership I'm sure you've heard about from other agencies is regional solutions teams. The regional solution team effort is an important way that DQ collaborates with its state and local partners. DQ staff are one of the agencies that are co-located with other agency teams, DLCD, ODOT, Housing, Business Oregon, and ODO, at regional solutions centers at Oregon's colleges and universities. The benefits from this are enhanced collaboration, a closer connection to communities, a focus on identified regional priorities, leveraging agency resources, and streamlined regulatory processes. That all sounds good, but there are tons of examples where this collaboration has worked really well for the community to cut through bureaucratic red tape and get to the outcome that we're trying to achieve. I'm going to talk a little bit about the example that's pictured here on the slide. This is the Astoria Landfill Sports Complex. This is an example of the many benefits of multiple public and private parties coming together to redevelop an inactive landfill to benefit the community that involved regional solutions. The City of Astoria, Columbia Memorial Hospital, the Astoria School District, and Recology, they ran the waste collection facility in Astoria, they followed DEQ requirements and using DEQ grants collaborated to close and redevelop an old municipal landfill as a new 17-acre athletic field complex to serve the school district. The plan involved a land swap with the school district for an old football field in order to have land to expand the hospital campus in Astoria. Without the help of DEQ and other agencies on the Regional Solutions team staff, the Astoria project would never have been realized. And if you haven't seen that complex, it's quite amazing. Really something the community is proud of, in addition to the expansion of their hospital. And they have a great place to take their garbage now for community. So it's really a nice demonstration of agencies working together under the Regional Solutions rubric. So getting out of the specific media programs into agency management, DEQ's agency management supports the work of the whole agency. Agency management is funded by surcharge on direct program salary and benefit spending. The majority of agency management is our central services division, which provides human resources, information technology, business management, health and safety, and organizational improvement. And I have to include some numbers for them. So here are some highlights from agency management accomplishments in 2014. Agency management led 8 process improvements. Some of the 2014 projects include improvements in air quality Title V permit program invoicing, our contract processes, and contract process and gov delivery. Gov delivery used for electronic communications with stakeholders and the public. Human resource staff completed 58 recruitments. DEQ meets or exceeds its goal of completing the hiring process within 76 days. Our accounting and financial management staff earned its 20th consecutive DAS Accounting Gold Star, and they processed about 2.5 million accounting records in 2014. Oh, sorry. Thanks, Paul. Mr. Receiver. In 2014, DEQ received a Clean Secretary of State annual audits. The agency completed 3,989 public records requests, with 80% of those were closed within 10 days. We ensured that our internal and external customers had access to information technology systems, and our website was with systems uptime of about 99.7%. Switching to the laboratory, the staff at the laboratory collect, analyze, and produce information for DEQ, other state agencies, and partners to make informed decisions about Oregon's environment. And here's the lab by the numbers. Staff at the DEQ laboratory visit over 1,500 monitoring locations in the state, collecting samples and information to help understand Oregon's environment. Over 8,000 samples are processed through the laboratory in Hillsboro each year, producing data used by DEQ and other agencies to make informed decisions. Many of the samples are tested for common analytes like metals or nutrients, but the state laboratory is also set up to conduct specialized analysis like dioxin and pesticides. The air quality index for Oregon is supported by staff at the laboratory. They maintain 45 air monitoring stations through the state that supply data to inform citizens of their air quality. if I haven't invited you, any of you are certainly welcome to come out and see our lab. It was constructed and housed with public health not that many years ago, but you're certainly welcome to come out and visit it in Hillsboro. Just let me know, and we'll make that happen for you. So certainly getting away from the programs and talking about challenges and addressing those, we have a lot of challenges in the agencies, and here's some of the ones that I'd like to highlight for you. The first one is non-point or area-wide sources or diffuse sources. It certainly is challenging to control pollution that doesn't come from a pipe or a stack, such as stormwater runoff and smoke from open burning. Non-point sources are a significant problem for both air and water quality. In most instances, these sources aren't permitted, making it challenging to find resources to address issues associated with non-point source. More stringent federal standards. It's becoming more challenging to meet new standards passed on to us by the Environmental Protection Agency. DEQ does not receive additional federal resources to implement new standards. We have a lot of small community needs. Many small communities lack the financial resources and technical expertise needed to address wastewater infrastructure and air quality needs. DEQ is absolutely committed to working with small communities to help them with these issues. Toxics in the environment. In Oregon and throughout the country, there is a growing awareness and concerns about toxics in our environment. Some of this is a result of having better data on toxics. Better data creates increased understanding of problems. Part of the concern comes from the fact that many toxics are not regulated in ways that prevent them from getting into our air, water, and land. All of this has led DEQ to develop a more effective and efficient approach to toxics that's across all media. So DEQ faces a broad range of challenges. What ties them all together is the challenge of determining the most efficient and effective ways to deliver service and produce result, and certainly working with all Oregonians to meet this these challenges. So later in the presentation, I'll talk about some ways that we have been addressing these challenges that I hope will get us ahead of some of those that are coming at us.
Mr. Peterson, yep. This would seem like a pretty good time to stop for today. Mm-hmm. We're a little bit more than half through your presentation. Mm-hmm. And it seems like a pretty natural transition to go into the changes in the agency over time tomorrow. So I'll see if there are any questions from the committee. Any questions? If not, we'll see you back here tomorrow at 8:30.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You'll see that.
Yeah. Could you remember?